Today's daf in Masechet Gittin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Irak Kedesh, is daf Samachet, and we are back to the main opening of the Mishnah, which of course is the monstrous Cordiacus. And up until now, we had a little bit of a fun sugya discussing the story of Rav Chista, Rav Sheshes, Resh Galusa, and so on. But now let's get back to the opening word of the Mishnah, opening phrase in the Mishnah. Mishnah Chazokadorekit, Kordiakis. So again, before we get into this sugya, I really think it's important to have a little bit of an overview of the concept of what is going on around here, because it sounds like really weird stuff. But I don't know how many people are aware of the fact of the universality of shading. These are not just mythological issues, these are medical issues. 20% of the population experiences attacks by shading. And these are real, normal, completely normal people. And they report on these things to their doctors and not to their psychiatrists either. So the question is, where is all of this coming from? Many people are embarrassed to admit it, but I would be extremely shocked to discover that in the whole group of the Daf Yomi people, there aren't people that are attacked by Shadim. Because so that's one. I'm sure there's more than one. And it's an extremely common, phenomena. And I know Mamish Rosh Hashivas that fight with Shadim every other night. So it's like, it's really, really, a common phenomena, and the Shadim take the same shape all across the world, all across history. That's what's shocking. And what's more, the earliest records of these Shadim, which are well over 2,000 years old, have the names that the Gemara uses for them. The earliest Shadim are called Lilits, which, of course, is what the Gemara refers to as the nighttime mother of the Shadim and so on, whatever. We're about to enter into an entire discussion about Shlomo HaMelech's search for the Shamir that required him to deal with the Shadim. And this we're bringing in the context of the Cordiacus that opens the Perek. So obviously, the Gemara is utilizing the very kasha that we started off at the beginning of, why don't you just talk about the physical phenomena that triggers this illness, and instead, you talk about a Cordiacus. That was the Gemara's initial kasha. You should be able to know the name of the phenomena. And then, for some reason, we use this as the basis of the description of all of the phenomena. Now, the Gemara that we're about to discuss is about Shlomo HaMelech's search for the Shamir. Now, let us remember that the Shamir comes from the Twilight Zone, because the Shamir is listed in the Mishnah Avos as one of the things that was created Bein Hashmashos, which literally means the Twilight Zone. And as I've explained to you, those things that are not part of the what we consider to be the normal Misuder Bereshis, which is called Sidrei HaTeva or Sidrei Bereshis in the Gemara, these are things that are part of a properly structured rational universe that most people think that they inhabit. And we understand that that supposedly rational universe we've discovered doesn't really exist in terms of physics, in terms of space-time or anything else, and that it is a place that we inhabit with our brain. So now the question is, in dealing with something that's from a twilight zone, what you would be experiencing would be seen by others as hallucinations, obviously. The question is, what happens when those hallucinations start being precisely the same to 20% of the people on the globe across thousands of years? So then the concept of a hallucination, as described as something that normal brains don't share and that it's part of some kind of substructure, no longer is reasonable to just call a personal hallucination, obviously. So we're talking about a phenomenon. So the suggestion over here that I am making about understanding these Gemaras is that in dealing with something from the Twilight Zone, that is to say the Shamir that is not a real worm that you're going to go out and find in your local zoo, that's not to say, by the way, that there aren't actual creatures that don't exhibit Shamir-like things. There actually are worms like this, believe it or not. And there's entire areas of Eretz Yisrael that only recently, over the past 50 years, the topology was finally understood as having been caused by rock-eating worms. So, you know, it's not totally off the wall. But the idea is that a particular concept like this is clearly not part of what you're going to find in your local zoo. And therefore, the Gemara says that accessing this required Shlomo HaMelech to access it through shading. Now, that concept of shading is itself not part of what you would call a rational world. My suggestion is very, very strongly, based on a lot of Mekoros, not only among the Mefarshim, but in the Zohar and so on, that the nature of what we call shading is, in fact, an experience of the human mind of a different structure of reality that is no less and no more real than the kind of reality that we normally inhabit. And that in order to be able to enter into a state like this, you are entering into your own subconscious. So that what the Gemara is talking about as the king of the Shadim, as Ashmedai and Shlomo HaMelech's access of the king of the Shadim, is not coincidentally king versus king. It is an aspect of Shlomo. In other words, in the same way that Esther, if she is going to be raped by Achashverosh, as the Zohar says, is going to send a shade in her place, women who are raped describe exactly that type of experience, in which their mind is turned off, and it's as if they are just a piece of physical material, and they're not themselves at all. It's as if the whole thing is not happening in real time to them. So that these ideas of these, it's always associated, by the way, with today, it's always associated with sleep paralysis, which you can look up and see. And that sleep paralysis is not a sleeping state, and it's not a waking state. It's basically bein hashmashos. The person can't move, but he isn't dreaming. He's within his normal bedroom, within his normal setting, and he's being attacked by shanim. And it's always the same description. The shade is sitting on his chest and strangling him, and he has to fight off the shade and so on. This is absolutely typical. So the issue over here of Shlomo HaMelech struggling with Ashmedai is very, very similar to the idea of needing to enter into a different kind of contact with things that are not part of your normal understanding of yourself in the world, and are part of our suspicions that our own underlying structures are basically demonic, which is really true. In other words, if we take into consideration the evolution of our brain and the things that were part of the development of our brain, it really is a story that is demonic, you know, in its relationship really to Tyrannosaurus Rex, you know, was making fun of the Kordaiakis, you know, it sounds like a type of dinosaur. But the truth is that all of these things are part of our genetic heritage in very, very complex ways. And because of this, clearly in the things that create consciousness, they lie at the bottom of whatever, we have no idea what any of that is about anyway, so it's not surprising in the least that we could have alternative experiences in which we are actually threatened to the depths of our being with our own selves, with our own minds. And of course, much of insanity and psychosis involves this type of thing. So this is not at all cuckoo. If one has a mind that is well organized and is strong enough to be able to contemplate these things. I mean, there's all types of things you can do to come into contact with these demons, but I must tell you, they are very highly inadvisable. No, seriously, I've tried this kind of stuff, and it's very inadvisable because it's easy to actually lose control and to be terrified for life from the experience, which is exactly what happens here with Shlomo HaMelech. So that this is not something that is just meant to be entirely metaphorical the way many of them before Shem understand it. And it's not meant to be taken, you know, as a, normal ways of what we call hyperliteralism. I believe that it is hyperliteralism. I believe that it is an actual experience, and I believe that it's experiences that are open to all, even though it's not a nice experience and not worthwhile. But it's definitely an exploration of the internal secrets of Bein HaShmoshes. And the Mishnah and Aves allows for that kind of thing. In other words, in the same way that we don't believe that the talking ass of Bilam was part of a real world, but we also don't think that it didn't exist. This is part of the idea of coming from Bein HaShmoshes. That's exactly the point of these Gemaras. Yeah, Daniel.
So it's a product of
consciousness
in a way.
No, it's not. It's not your connection is not good enough for me to make out your words. Sorry. Maybe afterwards, try again when you're in a better location. Okay, so we're up to now the Gemara of Asiti li Sharim v'Sharot v'Tanugot b'nei Adam Shida v'Shidot. This is right after the story of Reb Sheshes, who explains why it was that he wasn't going to trust these guys who tell him, why don't you just lie down? Yeah, right. Why don't I just lie down? Okay, so we got up to it's just about a third of the way down. Even more. So Shlomo HaMelech talks about himself, and he describes that he actually made something strange, Sharim v'Sharot. Now, Sharim v'Sharot sounds like singers, you know. So what does that mean? Sharim, male singers, female singers? Does it mean musical instruments? Male and female musical instruments. What would be male and female musical instruments? Is it the way that they're shaped? Is it whether they're concave or convex? Is it that they're used for different purposes? Some learn that some are used in the Beis HaMikdash and other are used just for normal orchestra, whatever. That's not what's important to us here. What's important to us is the end. Ta'anugot b'nei Adam, all types of wonderful, fun things. And he includes Shida v'Shidot. Now, what are Shida v'Shidot? Let's go through the pasuk. So, Sharim v'Sharot are different types of Minei Zemer. So, this is musical instruments. Tanugot b'nei Adam, those are swimming pools and jacuzzis and so on that Shlomo HaMelech made. Okay, so that's Brechot, Merchatzaot. But what is Shida v'Shidot? So, here in Bavel, they took that to mean literally Sheda v'Shedatin. So this would be male monsters, demons, female demons. B'marava, they say, no, it means Shidata. Shidata is a little sports car. And, it would be like his different Mercedes, MGs, and whatever that Shlomo HaMelech used to have, that the Pusik was very mocked when Egypt was doing all of the exportations on these sport cars. So, all right. So, no, I'm saying that as a little bit of a joke, but Lamaisa, many of the Mekoros, including the Targum, the marker of the whole thing on the Pasuk in the Targum, is that this was all a reaction to Shlomo HaMelech's being Marba Susim. So, the story that we have over here of his problems with the king of the Shedim follow that as part of an Onesh. Anyway, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, I mean, talking about these Shedim, I could tell you that there were 300 different types of Shedim in the place, the city called Shechin, you know, and even though I know the numbers, I have no idea what these things are. Shida atzmi eini yodea magi. I don't really know what we're dealing with, and I must say, neither does anybody. So, and this is not a particularly Rabbi Yochanan kind of thing. I'm saying that there's been a lot of work that's done on this over millennia. Nobody has come up with an explanation for these phenomena. That's why I really believe that my explanation should be taken seriously. Okay, so it's talking about Shida v'Shidatin, and why in the world would be Shlomo HaMelech be interested in getting hold of Sheda v'Shidatin? According to the way they understand Bavel, the meaning of it is literal, that it's talking about male and female monsters. I mean, what is this? Shidav Shidatin, Lamayi Baile, why would Shlomo HaMelech need something like this? So here's the point. Remember that it says that Habayit Bihibanato, Evan Shlema Masa Nivna. So it says that Shlomo HaMelech built the Beis HaMikdash, and Makevot V'Hagarzen Kol Klei Barzel Lo Nishma B'Bayit B'Hibanato. There was no metal tool that was heard in the Bayit while it was being built. Now, there's a big machlokas that we have elsewhere. Does this mean that the Avonim of the Beis HaMikdash were not able to be cut by metal kalim? That would be a real problem. Or does it just mean that in the place of the building, it wasn't heard, so that all of the work that was done on the Avnik Beis HaMikdash was not done in the Mokum Beis HaMikdash, was done outside, and then the Avanim were brought inside. So that's a machlokas. This Sugya Stosis points out is going according to Mandi Omar that the Avanim of the Beis HaMikdash itself were not allowed to be worked on with metal. So he didn't know what to do. So Amar Lo LeRabbanan, what am I supposed to do? So how do I get the correct work done if I can't use metal? Well, you could always use the shamir. Now, the Moshe Rabbeinu used the shamir for getting the avonim on the ephod to actually be kosher, because the problem with the ephod was that they had to also be shalim, and at the other hand, they needed to be engraved. How can it be engraved if they need to be shalim? So the Gemara says that what they did was use the shamir. The shamir would cause a cracking in crystal. So if you would put it down on a stone, the stone would crack underneath the shamir. So what they did was they wrote the names of the shvatim on these various minerals, put the shamir to follow the writing, and wherever it would go, this stone would crack so that it was essentially engraved without losing any material. So that was used, so you should be able to use that for building the Beis HaMikdash, the stone. So he said to the Rabbanim, well, where the heck am I supposed to find the Shamir, since the Shamir only exists in the Twilight Zone? So So they said to him, well, if you want to access the Twilight Zone, you need to go and deal with Shadim, obviously, right? Because that's the only part of your mind that's going to be able to access that. So you're going to have to find yourself, Shidav Shidatim, Kafshinu, Adadi, pressure them by pressing them on each other instead of on you, and then maybe they'll come clean and tell you how to get hold of the Shamir. So Efshad Yadi Umagal Elecha. Anyway, so he does this. He brings the Sheda and Shedatin and Kafshinu Hadadi. Now remember that the Gemara says elsewhere that Shlomo HaMelech was Yoshev al Kisei Hashem, and this means that he was the Melech al Elyoni va'al HaTachtonim, so that he was able to access things that are not normally given into the Rishus of a Melech, and therefore he really could use his mind as he wished. So he did this. So they said to him, Anan lo yadinan, actually, we have no idea where to find the Shamir, but if you get to the king of all the Shadim, whose name is Hashmadai, then you should be able to get the information, because this is like maximal Shadim stuff, you know? So we're just like small-time operators, you know? I mean, it's all nice talking to Bartimaeus, but you really need some higher energy over here. So Shlomo asks them, okay, where the heck do I find Hashmadai? So they say, well, you got to go up to the Alps. You know, there's a particular place, like that's where, you know, where Heidi wanted to get up to all the way on the top and scared the heck out of Peter, if you remember. And that must be where Hashmadai hangs out. So Betura Plan, such and such a mountain. And you know what he does? I mean, basically, Karyalei Birya Malyalei Maya. So, again, the Mefarshim explained that none of this is meant literally, because Sphinx and Shadim are not literal physical beings. They don't actually dig pits and drink water. But whatever interrelationship with the world they do have, as the Gemara says elsewhere, they are not supernatural in the sense of not requiring energy and being violations of the law of conservation of matter and energy. So whatever the heck it is that they do absorb as energy, we're calling Maya. That's the way the Maharal explains it. But the point is that whatever Hashmadai needs to utilize for energy, he has to make sure that no sneaky humans that know too much are going to make use of to influence him. So therefore, he digs a pit, so to speak, to keep the Barneas out and so on. And then he also locks it up so that he has got a signet, you know, on it to make sure that he can check and see whether, you know, the Kohen Gadol has been around here and tampering with the tabas of the Kohen Gadol. So he checks it before he drinks out of it. So chatmin b'gushpanke, it's going to be sealed with his ring. Now, he's very busy because, you know, half of the day he spends in the Shamayim learning in the Masifta Derakia to hear what it is that is being discussed up there in the yeshiva up in the sky. And so I guess if you're a melech of the Shadim, you can go in and listen to the Talmid HaChachamim. So he goes up there and he learns. And then he comes down to earth. And he listens in the Beis HaMedrash, you know. So he's there in the Masifta on earth as well. So he's really very busy. By the time he's ready to come home, he's really thirsty. So then when he gets back to his mountain, first thing he does is he checks the seal. Make sure Barnea has not been around, because that's the only one he's really worried about. Can be just about anywhere, you know, it's just his neighborhood. And so he checks that out first. If the seal is untouched, so he'll open up his energy supply and imbibe. Okay. Then he closes it again, and he goes to do the rest of his business. So Shlomo decides he is going to capture Ashbedai, the king of the Shadim. Now, how is he going to do this? Well, of course, he needs to use the incredible powers of Benayahu ben Yehoyada, who is right outside Gavi's home, which is, you know, allows us some local access over here. So why does he call Benayahu ben Yehoyada? So as the Marsha explains, if you take a look at that word, both son and father have Yud Kei Vav in their names, right? Which is the Keach of the Shem Hashem. And Benayahu is called Mr. Builder, Benayahu. So if we're talking about the building of the Beis HaMikdash, so the one that would have the keach of utilizing the Shemes Hashem, we'll see that he needs two Shemes Hashem for the job that he's about to undertake. So the Shlomo recognized the only one that's going to do this job for him is good old Benayahu. So Yoiv Leishu Shulta Dechokik Alei Shem. So he gives him a chain. And this chain has the Shem Hashem on its links. And he gives him a ring, Izkita Dechakik Ala Shem, and this is the ring to control them all. And now this Benayahu is well prepared, as we'll see. He's going to use this ring. It doesn't say Farish what he uses it for, but he uses this ring for being immune to Ashmedai. And give Aveda Amra, he brings along these skins of wool, and Ziki de Chamra, and he's got these containers of wine. Again, according to the Maharal, it means the equivalent of wine for an Ashmedai, not that Ashmedai can drink wine. Anyway, so Ozal, he goes up to the top of the Alps over here, and he digs a pit on the slope of the mountain underneath Ashmedai's bor. And he lets out all of the water. Then he takes the wool, stuffs up the hole, and now he goes up on top of Ashbedai's pit, digs another hole, and lets the wine, whatever it is, leak into Ashbedai's special protected pit, right? Then he fills up these things, covers them up beautifully so that they look like they're untouched. Ashbedai comes back, looks around, everything seems fine. Let's just see that inside. Ozo kora bira mitatoi, digs pit underneath, shafino lamaya, and he siphons the water out. Sataminu begavave de amra, he closes up the hole so that he doesn't want his wine to leak out, stuffs it up with the skeins of wool, and kora bira miloi. Then he digs another pit on top of Ashmedai's, he pours in this wine-like substance, shafchinu lechamra, and then he covers them over very well, taminu, so that they look like their natural covering, And then Shalak Yasapi Lana, and then Benayo sits and waits up in a tree for Ashmedai to come by. When Ashmedai comes, Sire the Gushpanka, first he looks very carefully, checks out the seal, finds out that it's all A-OK. He's got the response from the seal, beep, 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 checks out all right. There's not been any tampering. He opens it up and he finds, uh-oh, something is different. And now that doesn't bother him. It's not that that's going to make him feel somebody's been touching my porridge. No, that's not what he's going to think. Because if you live in the Twilight Zone, there's nothing so unusual about finding your water turning into wine. So that doesn't bother him. Now the question is, okay, so now how do I respond? So he says to himself, look, I mean, I know the pasuk that Shlomo guy says. He writes, Leitz hayayin homeshechar v'chol shogebo lo yechkam. He ain't going to get me. So it's all you need is to drink this kind of stuff. You're going to turn into a cynic. You're going to go insane. And anybody who goes nuts over wine is not going to be able to use his brains. I'm not going to drink this stuff. And besides that, it also says, Znut v'yayin v'tirosh yikach lev. Ooh, I don't want this kind of stuff. So this, even though this is not Shlomo, this is actually from Hosea, but, you know, obviously all, if you're not stuck in a particular time zone, you know, you can know all of Tanakh, like the Gemara always talks about. So, yeah, I'm not going to drink this stuff. So he doesn't drink. Now, it's getting very late in the day, hot and dry up there on the Alps this morning, and he's getting really, really thirsty. So, Kitzachi lo sagila, he couldn't take it anymore when he got that thirsty. And Ishti is actually a girsa that says that yain is a machlavava. No, it can't be all bad, you know. All right, so he figures he's going to drink a little bit of this. And he gets himself high, and he falls asleep. Aha! Benayo sneaks down from his tree, takes his magic chain that has the shemais of Hashem on the links of the chain, puts it around his neck. Now, because he was asleep, he also couldn't do his shape-changing stuff, right? Which, I mean, that's very common for a shade. So if he would turn into an octopus, he would be easily able to get out of that, right? But since he was asleep, Ashvadai put this on him while he was in the state of looking more or less human. And then he locks it right around his neck. So Ashvadai wakes up, and Avikami Parzel, he starts doing his shtick to get out of this thing, and Binayo shouts to him, don't move. Shema Demarachalach, Shema Demarachalach, watch out. Kadosh Baruch Hu's name is on you. You don't want to do anything that might tear the shame. And he was wearing the ring that controls them all. And at that point, he was ruling Ashmedai, so Ashmedai had to listen to him. He couldn't do anything. And so they set out to Shlomo HaMelech in Yerushalayim. Boom, 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 boom. Fine. Anyway, so Kinakit Leva Asay, so as they're walking towards Yerushalayim, they come to a palm tree, which Ashmedai just sort of accidentally rubs against it, and the whole thing smashes down. They come to a house. Ashmedai knocks down the house on his way also. This is a very galumping kind of shade. So then they come to this poor woman that's an almana, and she's got this broken down hut, and she's going nuts. Oh my God, they're coming my way. No! She goes outside of the hut and she says, please have mercy on a poor widow. Don't knock down my hut. So Ashmedai's got to bend out of the way in order to avoid knocking down her hut. But when he bends, he damages one of his vertebrae. After all, demons are not meant to bend. They're just meant to go straight through whatever's in their way, right? So poor Ashmedai. So Mata Gabikuvada Yar Mata, the almana comes out and she's begging him, Ichanana, like, please. All right. Kafala Komate Mine. So he bends and breaks a vertebrae. So, Itbar Be Garma. Says Ashmedai, yeah, that's that Shlomo jazz again. That's why it says in Mishle, Lashon Raka Tishbar Gorem. People that respond to these soft-hearted kind of things, it ends up breaking your bones. No good deed goes unrewarded. Shlomo HaMelech actually wrote that. Devora, please, please, mute. Thank you. Okay. Anyway, they're on their way, and he sees there's this guy that's blind, and he's lost. He doesn't know where to go. So he picks him up, puts him back on the road. Aske Luorche, sort of like a beetle on its back, you know. So Ashmedai puts the guy back on the road. And then he sees a drunk guy who's also lost, and he puts him back on the road. Then he sees this wedding celebration. Everybody's laughing and singing, and he bursts out crying. Then he sees a guy who is talking to a shoemaker, and he's saying, now look, I'm tired of replacing my shoes every couple of years. I want a 7-year pair of shoes with a money-back guarantee for 7 years. He actually tried getting a lifetime guarantee, but the guy explained to him, lifetime guarantees only mean the lifetime of the product. So go try to get your money back. Okay. So he was ready to settle for a 7-year guarantee. And then he bursts out laughing. Then he sees somebody engaging in this amazing, magical stuff, a kosem, and he's doing this stuff, and he bursts out laughing again. Anyway, they come to Yerushalayim. Shlomo HaMelech keeps Ashmedai cooling his heels for 3 days, just to put him in his place. You know, I'll bet you think you're hot stuff. All right, so he keeps him cooling his heels. First day, Shlomo doesn't come. So he asks the Avadim, Amaylo Kobayli Malka Lagabe, what's going on with the king? I mean, he seems to be in desperate need to speak to me. Say, well, he actually had too much to drink. Uh-huh. What do you say about that, boys? Exactly. Shlomo had too much to drink. So did Ashmedai. So anyway, Shaka Levinta, so he takes a brick and puts it on top of another brick. He doesn't talk to the servants. They come and tell Shlomo. And Shlomo says, yeah, you know what he's trying to tell you. He's trying to tell you that for a hangover, you better drink more. Actually, the Marsha says that this is basically, he's telling him the pasuk that is referring to Yom Macha. Vaya, the Navi describes what it's like, people that sit, drink in their parties all day long, and are convinced that this is the way it's going to be tomorrow, and every tomorrow, it's always going to be wonderful. Yeah, tell Shlomo, sure. Yom Machar will be just the same. No problem. And okay, next day he says, what the heck? Where is the king? Oh, today he overate. So he takes a levina off of the other levina, puts it on the ground. He said, well, he's telling you that this is enough. If the guy's overeaten, keep food away from him and get this man normal. There's something wrong with this guy. At the end of 3 days, Ashmedai is brought in front of Shlomo. Ashmedai takes a measuring rod, or actually a reed, really, is a kanya, of course. He measures off 4 amos and throws it down on the ground in front of Shlomo. And he says to Shlomo, you know, all that's going to be left for you in this world is 4 amos of a grave, okay? So I don't know who the heck you think you are, what it is you think you are. As far as I'm concerned, you're a piece of dead men walking. And now you've got everything that a person can want. All of your swimming pools, all of your jacuzzis, all of your music. And now you need to control me. You don't think that something is a little bit insane about somebody like that? So, Mirde. Less than Amala Arba Garmidis. All you're going to have is 4 amas of a grave. Now you think you've got the whole, he got the whole world. In his arms, he got the whole wide world. But that's not enough for you, right? But now you're not happy. You've got to have me too. What's wrong with you? Oh, said Shlomo, Chas v'Shalom, you're misreading me. I'm a good guy. All I need to do is build a Beis HaMikdash, and I need some information. All I want to do, I don't want anything from you. I just want to build the Beis HaMikdash, and I need the Shamir. So Ashmedai says, well, the Shamir. Now, I got to tell you, I have not been given power over the Shamir. So you're talking to the wrong guy. I can tell you, however, who does have power over the Shamir. It was given to the Sara of the Yam, because it actually lives in the sea. But the Sara Yam only gives it to the Tarnagola Bara. Why would he only trust the Tarnagola Bara? Because the only creature that really keeps a promise is the Tarnagola Bara. The Mehemen Le'ashvua said he trusts the Shvua, and the Tarnagola Bara uses the Shamir for very important work. And that is the important work of making this planet inhabitable. So basically, where do you think all of this topsoil comes from on the Earth? I mean, if you look around, you know, the stuff that's sticking out from those original balls of Ice Age stuff and so on, as Richie can tell you, all around his house, there ain't nothing growing unless something has cracked the rock. Am I right, Richie? Solid rock. Okay, so the thing that, there we go. So the thing, you know, Rich, what makes all of those beautiful cracks where all of those beautiful plants start growing? That's the Tarnagola Vara. How does it make those cracks? It's Johnny Appleseed. So it goes all around the world, puts the Shamir down, and all the Tarnagola Bras do this. Not only one Shamir. So the Tarnagola Bra puts down the Shamir, cracks the rack, drops in some seeds from trees, which then take root, break up the rocks, create the topsoil, and make an island for Richie, so that this Gemara is actually very, very personally nogea. Now, so that's the business of the Tarnagol Vara, and if you want it, so then you've got to find the Tarnagol Vara. And my Avid Bey, what does he do with it? What's he in inside? Mamte le leturi dospu yishuv. He brings it to the tops of mountains where there's no, he needs to terraform those areas, takes the Shamir, puts it on top of the mountain, which cracks the mountain open, and then he comes and he throws in some tree seeds. So mankit maisi bizrani mi'ilani v'shadiyata. And over time, just in a few ten thousands of years, he ends up with a Richie. Amazing. So this guy is busy. That's why if you take the name Duchipat, which is the other name of the Tarnagol Vara, the Targum of it is very strange. It's called the Nagar Tura. That is the mountain puncher. So it makes holes in mountains. That's why it's called that. Okay, so he sends out his men to try to find a nest of a Duchipat. All right, so they go out, and they find one that has little chicks in it. So while mommy is away finding some delicious worms, they cover it with glass. And then mommy comes back, finds babies under glass, mouths wide open, crying, "Mommy, feed us." Mommy becomes very disturbed, realizes the only thing to do is to crack open the glass. Now, how is a poor bird supposed to crack open the glass? Very simple. All she needs to do is bring the Shamir, and she gets her kids back. Ah, but that's making personal use of the Shamir. Was that included in the heter of her shvua to the Sar Hayam? It's a very dangerous moment in extremis for mommy. So she goes, brings the Shamir, sure enough, cracks open the glass, and there we go, Binayo or some other Eved of Shlomo jumps out and goes, boo! And the Tarnagola Vara is scared, drops the Shamir, flies away for a minute, Rama Bekala, Shakle Shadia, she drops the Shamir, sees that the human has grabbed the shamir and immediately goes to commit suicide because it couldn't keep its promise and realize that it had violated the most sacred of oaths to return the shamir and not to make use of it. Now, Shlomo HaMelech has the shamir. All right, so he couldn't resist. And he decides he's keeping hold of Ashmudai. It's nice to have Ashmudai to talk to at night. Okay, meanwhile, Binayahu wants to know what the explanation is of the weird things that Ashmudai did on his way back to Yerushalayim. So Amar le Binayahu, can you explain to me why when you saw that blind guy, why did you pick him up, put him back on the road? I thought you guys are not particularly helpful, to say the least. There must have been a reason. Well, there was, says Ashmudai. I heard up in the Shamayim that this guy is a tzaddik gomer, and anybody who helps him out is going to be zocha to Olam Haba. Well, as a shade, I always dreamt of Olam Haba, you know, so I figured this was my big chance. Yeah, but that doesn't explain why when you saw the guy was drunk, was obviously not a tzaddik gomer, why did you put him back on the road? So this can't be the right explanation. Ah, that was something else. That's because up in the Shamayim, he was considered to be, look at this Russia gomer. So I figured, well, if I give him some pleasure in this world, then he can burn in hell forever, and he doesn't. I love to watch him burning in hell. So because of that, I figured we'll give him a little bit of good things in this world so that he uses up whatever little schus he has in the world. Ki hecha delich leili alma. I want him to burn up his world. Well, why, when you saw a wedding, did you cry? I mean, surely it's not, can't be just people are happy that makes you cry? No. No. The human situation is a tragedy. I am part of that tragedy. I live off of that tragedy. When I go to the movies, I cry because it's so much fun. Why do you humans go to these movies and pay such kind of entry fees, for God's sake? They like to cry, too. Anyway, so there we are at this wedding, you know, and everybody's sitting, and they're clapping and dancing. Poor humans. Little do they know that what's going about to happen is that this guy, the chosan, is going to drop dead within the next 30 days, leaving a one-week-old brother. Yibum. Oh, no. Oh, no. And so we wait for 13 years for little baby brother to grow up and provide chalitza. The kala will be very happy. I cried my eyes out. It was wonderful. Anyway, that's why I cried there. Okay. So, boy, may me scaffre, but go to lasin yuma. Who boy mentally of him cut on twice ashenin. Okay. And then why, when you heard the guy ask for a 7-year guarantee on his boots, why'd you laugh over there? Ah, because I love these humans. This guy has got all of his plans in place for his vacation in 2025. Now, this guy has no idea whether he's going to be alive next week at this time. But the idiot has got his life all worked out. Can you imagine the insane hubris of asking a shoemaker, you need shoes for 7 years? I found that to be another beautiful indication of how insane these humans are. Well, okay, I will shiva yuma, Leslie. That guy can't be sure he's got 7 days, but he needs 7-year shoes, right? Amazing, amazing kind of bria you people are. I read somewhere that these humans were created in the Twilight Zone. My time aki chazite lahu kasma davi kosima and chachika. So why'd you burst out laughing when you saw the magician doing his magic? You know where that guy was standing? He was on the secret entrance to Fort Knox. So I figured if this guy can really do magic, you know, maybe you should look into what he's standing on. So liksom, my deikatute. his brilliant magic ought to give him a little bit of insight into the billions beneath him, right? Anyway, with him until he finished the entire Beis HaMikdash. It took him 7 years. Anyway, so one day he was all alone with Ashmedai. So he says to Ashmedai, you know, I got to tell you something, man. You don't impress me. You really don't impress me. Why would the Pusik say, Kito afot re'emlo, so we view the power of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be similar, Kito afot, Malachi Ashara, Yisra'im, refers to Shadim. I don't understand. That's El Motziyam Mitzrayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is compared to this nonsense. You look like a regular, typical jerk to me. I mean, what's the big deal? I don't see why you are better than humans. You sit around laughing, but you're basically just part of our brains. Amalei, well, if you'd like a demonstration, you could take off this ridiculous chain and you could give me your magic ring, and the ring is mine. And then we shall see what it is that I can do. So shkoshu shiltaminoi, and then give me a ring, va'achvile rabutai, then I'll show you how we're better than you are. All right, says Shlomo, big mistake. So he takes off the special chain with the Shem Hashem, gives him his magic ring, and Ashmedai immediately swallows up Shlomo HaMelech in one bite, or some say it means the ring, but it's much more pashtus is that. He swallows up Shlomo HaMelech, Osfei Lechad Gapi Berakia Lechad Gapi Be'ara, puts one of his wings up in the sky, his other wing he puts down on the ground, takes a deep breath and goes, boom! And Shlomo HaMelech goes flying for 400 parsos and is now very far away. Whew! And I, he shaita Omar Shlomo, and that's the moment that Shlomo realized in Kohelet, what is left for a man with everything that he's done under the sun? I take the world over, take over Ashmedai, build the Beis HaMikdash, and now I am left a Saruman, a wandering beggar. And Zehayachal Kibi Cholamali, all that I have left is this. What is this? My vizeh, what is this? So, actually, the Lord of the Rings didn't come from nowhere. There were two things that Saruman had. Turns out it was a machlokas, Rav and Shmuel, and he paskined both of them. So he had Saruman's coat, and he had his staff. Exactly. So it was machlo, one says it's machlo, v'chad amar gundo, and here is poor Shlomo HaMelech wandering around like a beggar. And so he would go begging from door to door. Wherever he would go, he would say, like it says in the Pasuk, Ani Kohelet hayiti melech haYisrael b'Yerushalayim. I used to be king. Everybody looks at this guy, he's out of his mind. Used to be king. So he finally makes it back many years later, and now he comes to the Sanhedrin, and he says to them, I used to be Shlomo, and I have been thrown out of my life by my insane brain. So they say, Mirte, hold on a minute. This guy sounds insane, but there's monomania and then there's monomania. I mean, you don't find people that are fully rational, can explain everything to you, and there's only one thing that they say that is absolutely crazy. That they were displaced by some demon. I mean, this doesn't make any sense. It can't be that he's truly insane. So, you don't find someone insane being only stuck on one particular issue and everything else, he seems completely normal. Something strange is going on. So they call in Benayo. Now, Benayo, remember, he still had his ring. Shlomo HaMelech's ring, that was his ring. Benayel had his ring, and therefore they were sure, as Amasha explains it, they were sure that the one thing that Ashbadai would stay well away from was Benayel. He ain't tagging with this guy again. So therefore they called Benayel, and they said, tell me something. Has the king had you in for an audience lately? I mean, you two were very close, weren't you? Yes, it's very strange, says Benayel. Haven't heard a thing from him. Look. So then they go and they ask the various women, remember, he had all of those wives, has the king been in to have relations with you? So, yes, they said, he actually visits. So the Rabbanan sent the message, well, you've got to check his feet, because remember, the Shadim don't have enough resolution for anything but the stick feet. So see if he's got stick feet. Oh, you can't see if he has stick feet because he's always wearing these ridiculous big, Sesame Street in Israel? What do they call them, Barnea? The type of slippers? Miki Tiki, something like that. I forgot what it is. All right, so he's got these big slippers that he wears all the time, so we never get to see his feet anymore. Sort of weird. Okay, and he's also been acting very strange because he doesn't seem to mind if we're Nidais or not. He thinks he can sleep with us while we're Nidais. And he's even been known to go to his mother and demand sex with his mother. The Katavan Amila Bat Sheva Ime. Something's with this guy, I don't know. Well, of course, a shade is not mitzvah on an Eishes Ish, so this should be no problem. Anyway, so they bring Shlomo back in to the Sanhedrin. They give him another magic ring, Havulei Iskata, and they give him the chain that has the shame of Hashem on it. And this way, Shlomo is now going to take over. So Ki Aile, when Shlomo came in to his own room, to where Ashvadai is sitting on Shlomo's throne, Chazia Ashvadai sees the ring on its way and flies away. Chazia Parach. And that was the end of that. But nonetheless, it wasn't the end of that for Shlomo. For the rest of his life, he was terrified. Shlomo never got over his terror of Ashvadai. This is the weird pasuk. He named mitato shel Shlomo. Shishim giborim saviv la migiborei Yisrael. He would have his bed surrounded by 60 of the most powerful people in Israel. Kulam achuzei cheret, milumedei milchama, all of them handling laser swords. Ish charbo yerecho mipachad belelot, terrified of what's coming in the night. And therefore, it was a long-term problem. Rav Shmuel, by the way, argued about did Shlomo actually get his malchus back, or was he forever maimed in this? And that's a machlokas. Chadamar melech v'hadyot, v'chadamar melech v'hadyot v'melech. The question is, did he actually become a real king again? Or was he actually less than that? The Mepharshim explained that from that point on, he would have had a din of a nasi, but he would not have had a din of the melech. So the question is, would he ever be empowered? The way the Maharal understands this, the question was, would he ever be empowered to actually battle evil? This whole interaction, as remember, as the Zohar explains, Benogeya the Mishkan, the building of the Mishkan was the building of the power against Ra. And that from the time of the Binyan HaMishkan, the only Ra that is available in the world is the evil that we bring ourselves. It no longer has the power of the war of evil. And the question is whether the Binyan the Beis HaMikdash that he did, L'chadchila, was there actually a renewed power of a malchus that would be given to him with his ring, so to speak, and with his chain so that he could keep things under control? Or he never really got back to that madrega that would have allowed him to be the melech that had the Mokam HaMikdash to be able to do battle with the Keches of Tuma and Rab, which is all of this is about, that he was always afraid from that point on, and therefore never became the Melech HaLeonim HaLtachtonim that he was before. Anyway, so much for our exploration of the illnesses of human minds. And look, I mean, all the Mefarshim understand that the question over here obviously had to do with Shlomo HaMelech's own Madriga, like the Targum points out. There were problems in Shlomo HaMelech, as we know, and all of the mitzvahs of the Melech, and the question, Lo Yarbalo Nisusim, Lo Yarbalo Nashim, and all of these things, and Yarbet, Velo Asif, and so on, Lo Ashiv Mitzrayim. So as the Gemara says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, you know, the hell with Shlomo. A guy get rid of 1,000 Shlomos and not get rid of one little tiny coats of a Yud in the Torah, that he's going to say, I say Lo Yosif, and he'll say, I will be Mosif. Okay, so this is basically the dangers of power, and that they're not just midos issues. They are linked deep, deep in our consciousness. And even though you are convinced, and we are all convinced, put me into a situation like that, I would never do anything like that. Try it out. And like the Gemara points out, take a look at poor Shaul HaMelech, would do anything not to have become king. And then, as he says, you know, once I'm king, you know, I'll kill anybody that attempts to take it away from me. This is true about all of the corruption of power. It is not just a psychological issue. It's a problem in the nature of human consciousness and intelligence. And that's basically what this is all about. So the Kordaikis and the question of, oh, that's very interesting. Akiva writes that AI, yeah, I know, I know that. One of the ways that you can tell if an AI created videos is whether their fingers are normal fingers. It cannot make videos with fingers. It's so strange. Which is exactly the toes. What's that?
Commercial AI can. That's what the studio.
Yeah, obviously. But for you to take, yeah, for you to be able to tell very easily whether somebody's trying to fool around with AI, that's amazing. That's beautiful, Akiva. Exactly the Nakuda. You can't get the toesies right. Perfect.
Amazing. It's not good on the tape.
Slicha?
AI images are not good on the details.
Yes, on details, exactly, on the resolution. Okay, excellent. So I hope...
It came from the horse's nightmare.
Yeah. Of course, I put that on the daf thing, so you can take a look at the names. It was the name of the also of the Shenim. You can take a look at the various names throughout history, and again, anybody that's affected by this who takes it much more seriously than people that are not affected by it, because it's a pretty awful experience. Okay, Kol Tov World.
Before he does, why is the building of the Beis HaMikdash tied into the Twilight?
I just explained to you why. Because the Beis HaMikdash itself is connected to the Twilight Zone. Remember that the whole idea of the Beis HaMikdash comes through that old story of the talking ass as well. It's Bilam that describes the Mashiach and the creation of the Beis HaMikdash and everything else. There's a good reason for that. When you're involved in a war, so the two parts of the war is the structure of reality that we call Olam HaZeh, that we attempt to make a actual home out of a universe that is not really home. And the ability to do that is directly connected to the Beis HaMikdash, which is why the Churban is directly related to the loss of any sense of normalcy, Seder, systems of reference, and home. Beis Chayenu, that's the whole idea of the Beis HaMikdash. So it's deeply connected aspects of the Twilight Zone. And if you think about it, listen, even the simplest things in the world. I mean, many people are just not sensitive. Do you enjoy doing dishes? Do you enjoy cleaning your home? Do you enjoy making a home a nice place? Damn well you do. Exactly. So different people enjoy different aspects. Why is that so meaningful to you? Because it part of what it is to be human is to create structures that provide a sense of a real, rational, useful, kind of universe. In whatever extent you can do that, you feel you're doing a labor of love, exactly like the Nagartura is providing for the basis of that world. So ultimately, Shlomo HaMelech's ability to deal, the more he attempted to deal with that world and to make it logical, the more he needed to penetrate into the Twilight Zone. Why do you think that people are so deeply attracted to horror novels? It's exactly this nakuda. This is what Stephen King actually defines as what he does. You need to examine and to face up to the horror of the chaos that is actually lurking in our brains before you're able to take seriously any of this artificial world that you're living in. Okay, these are, you know, this was very much Jungian psychology as well. You needed to be able to face these issues. He saw them as being very linked to the common consciousness of humanity. He actually has a whole book analyzing all of the different types of shadim and the nature of the demonic. Because without it, I mean, I think he was totally out of his mind, but that's my personal opinion. But that, without it, he felt you would never be able to have any kind of real structure. You know, you don't want to read the Red Book, believe me. It's as bad as talking to Ashmedai. All right, everybody. Stick with nice things, pleasant things, sweet people, the kind of people you can trust. Even if it's nothing but a duchy pot, if it keeps a promise, it's better than these humans, let me tell you. Kol tov. Have a wonderful day. And only good things.
Amen.
Kol tov. You guys better hang up because my computer's acting up and won't let me close. Weird. Don't get it. No.
He's stuck ready in the Twilight Zone.
looks like I'm stuck. Yeah, you're right. Maybe I opened my mouth too wide, you know? You got to be careful with these sugyas. Take care.